One of the things that I've been able to do a lot over the years of ministry is perform wedding ceremonies. And I've got to marry three of my four daughters. Cried like a baby every time. Loved it. And as we go through the ceremony and the vows and the rings, and then it comes to the very end where an introduction is in order. And so I try to do my best ringside voice, you know, because I think this is so cool. And I go, "And now, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you for the first time ever, Wow, that is kind of cool. Mr. and Mrs. I fill in the blank, right? And it's kind of a big deal. I mean, we've gone through the ceremony, vows and rings, and we've got to see a miracle, right? Bible tells us that God takes one, and he makes one. He's like the only one who can do that, right? It's cool. And then I get to introduce them for the very first time. I just get the biggest kick out of doing that. And this, there were four guys that were charged with a responsibility of introduction that's absolutely staggering to consider. Their first job was to introduce Jesus. You know, beginning from, you know, his birth and go through his ministry. And then at the end of their books, they were charged with the responsibility to introduce a resurrected Jesus. That's pressure. What do you do with that? You know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they were charged with this responsibility to introduce. And today we're going to be looking at John's introduction of the resurrected Jesus. And I was thinking about, how do you do that? How do you introduce this person to the world? And well, John, he chose to do it in John chapter 20 through a bit of an introduction, just like a wedding, right? We go through the initial things and making the comments and the vows and all those things, and then the big introduction. So he, in John 20, he gives us this little introduction, and then he tells us three stories. He says, "I want to introduce Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, to you in the context of these three stories." And that's what he does. And so it's really important for us to say, "Okay, John, let's go in. Let's see your introduction here, and let's jump into these stories." Well, his introduction begins on that Sunday morning, which we would identify as the first Easter morning. And it was before dark, and one of the women, Mary Magdalene, had made her way down in the twilights of the morning, and she gets down to the tomb and presumably to want to appropriately bury and prepare Jesus' body. And she goes in because the stone's rolled away, which was like, ah! And then she looks in, and there's no body in there. And she runs all the way back to the disciples where they were and says, "Hey, there's no body in there." And well, John, who's giving us this introduction, by the way, and Peter, they just start trucking. They're going to go run, and apparently Mary Magdalene was following, and John, I guess he was a little faster, you know, put your money on John. He got there first, and he sneaks a peek in there. He's just looking, and then Peter comes in, and he just goes right in there, and they're looking, and they're both scratching their head, because as Mary said, there was no body in there. But what they saw were the grave clothes. And the grave clothes, they had been just wrapped over his body in a hurried manner that Friday, were over him, and they'd put some anointing spices and all that on there, and it was, they were all there. It was almost, they just kind of collapse because there was no body holding them up anymore. And then at the front of where would have been Jesus' head, there was the face cloth that they put on the bodies in those days, and it was all folded up and it was sitting right there, and it was just a puzzlement. Grave robbers, would it have looked like that? How in the world could they get a body out with not disturbing any of the cloths that had been wrapping his body? And the face cloth so neatly there, if someone's going to come and do a body steal for whatever reason, you just kind of grab and run, you know, and yet it was there all put together as if his body just passed right through the cloths that had contained him. John, he's the one telling the story, and he says, you know what? Right then, I believed. And he doesn't tell us what he believed, but presumably he believed that Jesus had raised from the dead. We don't know. He doesn't tell us what Peter believed at that point. But then they leave, and Mary Magdalene stays at the tomb weeping. Where is his body? Story number one. Mary was standing outside the tomb crying. And as she wept, she stooped and she looked in. And she saw two white-robed angels, one sitting at the head and the other at the foot of the place where the body of Jesus had been lying. And normally in Scripture, when an angel shows up, people go, ah! She didn't do that. She just was, because she was so overwhelmed with the emotion of wanting to find Jesus' body that their presence was a non-factor for her. And they asked her a question. They said, dear woman, why are you crying? The angels asked her. Because they have taken away my Lord, she replied, and I don't know where they have put him. At this, she turned to leave, and she saw someone standing there, eyes filled with tears, and still that early morning light, hard to make things out. It was Jesus. But she didn't recognize him. Dear woman, same question the angels asked, why are you crying? And Jesus asked her, who are you looking for? Well, she thought he was the gardener. I mean, who else is going to be in a garden but a gardener, right? She says, sir, if you have taken him, and the language there is, since you have taken him away, tell me where you put him and I'll go get him. And then there was this dramatic moment, and Jesus responded with just one word. Mary! At which she slung around and turned, ran over, up, however it was situated, and grabbed the hold of him and cried out, Rabboni, which means teacher. Sobbing, holding for all she was worth. Don't cling to me, Jesus said. I haven't yet ascended to the Father, but go find my brothers and tell them. Go find my brothers. As far as we know, this is the first time that Jesus referred to his disciples as brothers. Because you see, the resurrection changes things. And what's even sweeter is she knew exactly who he was talking about. Give them this message, I'm ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. And Mary Magdalene found the disciples and she told them, I've seen the Lord. And then she gave him his message. So John, in story number one, he tells us that the resurrected Jesus calls people by name. There's something about hearing your name, isn't it? Something about that, you know, whether you're in a crowd and it's all kinds of noise and you hear your name, you know, Tom, I go, oh, hey, you know, I'm waving at somebody, and then there's another Tom behind me, and I'm like, hey, yeah, I got you. All right, there's a bunch of Toms, I guess, so, you know, it wasn't me, but you can't help it. You hear your name, it's personal. It's so personal to us, isn't it? No matter how many times you hear it, you respond. It's one of my favorite stories. I've told it like 100 times, and get ready, 100 more times are coming. My friend got us some tickets to the Pacers-Bulls game. Doubles. The late 90s Bulls. With Jordan and Pippen and Rodman. We were second row right behind the Bulls bench. And I just sat there and looked at them all. Hey, look at that. Oh, man. Oh, he's standing up. Oh, he's dribbling. Oh, he's walking. Everything Michael Jordan did, I had to comment on, right? It was crazy. But wow, there was a moment in the game where it was a TV timeout. The coaches were, it wasn't a very intense moment of the game, whatever. It was just a TV timeout. So there was no, it was unusual. I mean, super quiet in this huge, huge stadium, right? And buddy next to me, he just yells, "Hey, Michael!" Telling you the truth. Jordan turns around and looks at us. How many times a day does he hear his name yelled? Especially in that context. But it was his name, and so he turned and he looked at us, and we're looking at him, and we're going, "You're the greatest, man! I love you! Oh, you're the best!" Ah! Oh, man, he flashes us that billion-dollar smile, right, you know, and just kind of shakes his head. He'll never remember that story. I'll never forget that story. Someone calls your name, it turns your head. Someone calls your name, it's a call not just to an enunciation of syllables that sound familiar to us. It's a call to our heart, to our attention. You see, Jesus, when He had resurrected, John wanted us to know that Jesus takes you and I very personally. Mary. And immediately she knew who it was. The thing about the resurrected Jesus is He's still calling names. Hasn't stopped. And the truth, the reality is He's calling yours. Perhaps there's been a lot of noise, a lot of things going in and around you that make it kind of hard to hear. But in the midst of all of that, there's a name being called by this resurrected Jesus, and it's yours. Story number two. That evening, that Sunday night, after there'd been some interaction with Jesus, the disciples were meeting behind locked doors because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders. Suddenly, Jesus was standing there among them. "Peace be with you," He said. And as He spoke, He showed them the wounds in His hands and His side, and they were filled with joy when they saw the Lord. And again, He said, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, so I am sending you." The Father sent His Son, and the Father sends His children still. Then He breathed on them, and He said, "Receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive anyone's sins, they're forgiven. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven." The language there is carrying this emphasis that you are entrusted with this message as to how it is somebody can experience forgiveness of sins and peace with God. It's your job to bring the message, and it's your job to let people know that if they do not respond to that message, to that invitation of finding forgiveness in Jesus, there will be none for them on that day when they stand before Jesus. The whole message has to be shared. And they got the point, and off they went. this scene. What do we see happening here? They were afraid of the Jewish leaders. It would make sense, right? I mean, they just had killed Jesus. Who's next in line, right? We're the ones that were with them. We're the ones that were doing all this stuff. They killed him. Who's next? Us. So they're in this door, and it's locked, and presumably the same upper room where they had the last dinner just a few days earlier, and there they are in this room, and all of a sudden Jesus just shows up. Ah! Apparently, resurrected bodies don't really have door issues anymore. You can lock them all day long, it ain't gonna matter. And there was Jesus standing in their presence, and of course, he said, peace. Peace be with you. The resurrected Jesus, as John tells us this part of the story, which he was there, by the way, is letting us know that he meets us where we are. I love that. They were afraid. They were scared. And they were hiding. Oh, my, is there so much fear in our world today? So many people afraid. So many people scared. What if this happens? What if they do this, or what if they do that? And on it goes. And other types of fears. What if I'm stuck in this situation and I'm never going to get out of this? What happens when I die? Well, what about this and what about that? And the fears just, and there's always people around who are ready to feed your fear. Make no mistake, to feed it, throw gas on it. And it's right there where Jesus met them in their fear. Perhaps we're in that place of disappointment, confusion. We look into the future and it's just kind of this dark mist. It's where we are today. It's troubling. Our peace is nowhere to be found, and so we just click a little faster and move a little more, stay on a little longer, turn up the volume a little louder, so all the places where I am, I can just kind of try to drown that out. I drink a little more, do a little bit more, whatever I got to do to keep it quiet. Good news today, as John would introduce the resurrected Jesus, he's there to meet you right where you are. Right where you are. In the midst of your fears and concerns and disappointment and broken dreams, the resurrected Jesus is there. He invites us in the first story to listen because he's calling our name. He invites us in the second story to look because he is right there with you. Ask us to open our eyes. He's in the midst of it. Story number 3. One of the 12 disciples, Thomas, we talked about him last week, didn't we? Thomas, he was the one who said, hey, Jesus is going back to Jerusalem. We're going back with him. We'll just go die with him. And we gave him the name Thomas the Courageous. Well, my, how things turn here is Thomas wasn't there when Jesus appeared the first time. We don't know where he was. We just know he wasn't with the others. And they told him, we've seen the Lord. But he replied, I won't believe it unless I see the nail wounds in his hands, put my fingers into them, and place my hand in the wound in his side. This isn't doubting, Thomas. This is like unbelieving, willful unbelieving, Thomas. I don't care what you all got to say. No, not a chance. Not believing it. So he goes from Thomas the Courageous to Thomas, I don't believe a word you're saying. What in the world happened? Turns out Thomas is a little bit like all of us, isn't he? The story continues. 8 days later, the disciples were together again, and this time Thomas was with them. So at least he stayed in the waiting and in the searching mode. And I encourage those of us here who are struggling with unbelief as well, keep searching. Keep listening. Keep being engaged. The doors were locked, but suddenly, as before, Jesus was standing among them. Peace be with you. And then his attention directed right towards one individual. You guess who that might be? Thomas. And he looks at Thomas. They lock eyes. He says, Thomas, put your finger here. Thomas, take your hand, stick it into the wound in my side. Don't be faithless any longer. Believe. Wow. Thomas, 28, he says, my Lord and my God. Something clicked in the man in that moment. He's face to face with what he said he didn't believe in, and yet there he is right in front of him saying, touch my hands, put your hand in the scars. And his understanding of who he was talking with went through the roof. You've always been my Lord, and now I know you are my God. Who is it that can raise themselves from the dead? Who is the author of life? Only one. That is God himself. And Jesus told him, this kind of makes me smile a little bit, John, in telling this story. Jesus makes this comment to Thomas, but I can be confident in saying that you and I are on his heart and on his mind as he tells Thomas what he's going to tell him. Says, Thomas, you believe because you have seen me. Blessed are those who believe without seeing me. It's almost like Jesus, you believe because you've seen me. And then he stops and he turns and he looks at you and me and he tells us something very important. Blessed are you who believe even though you do not see. He invites us to enter into the blessing of belief in him. The resurrected Jesus offered his wounds as evidence of his resurrection. This invites us to touch. Touch. Reach out your hands. Touch. He hasn't revoked the invitation. His addressing Mary by name invites us to listen. He's calling our name. His meeting the disciples right where they were invites us to look. He's right here with us too, and his extended scarred hand invites us to touch. Paul, he would come later and tell all kinds of people about Jesus, and he'd start churches, and then he'd write letters back to these churches, and at the end of one of his letters in Galatians, it was a hard letter, and he's like, so listen, you guys stop wearing me out about this. And then he makes this comment, I bear on my body the scars that show that I belong to Jesus. Something telling about scars, isn't there? And I thought about this past week. This is the only person who has received their resurrected body. The only person who's been raised from the dead. And he still has his scars. Isn't that confusing? We look at Paul talking about this in 1 Corinthians 15, and he talks about that we're going to lay aside these old bodies that get tired and sick and worn and all that. They're going into the ground, but when Jesus comes back, we're going to get a brand new body, a glorified body that's completely different, completely whole, set to be in eternity with God. It will be perfect in every way. I've got dumb little scars all over my body, and when I get my resurrected body one day, I don't believe any of those scars are going to be on there. There came a point in time in life where, you know, I had to get a leg amputated, and when I get my glorified body, I'm going to have both legs. You see what I'm saying? Jesus made a decision. He left these scars on his body forever as a testimony. It's a testimony to many things. First is a testimony of his resurrection. Thomas, these scars, they speak of his power, his victory over sin and over death. And I would say that the scars, and in eternity for those who put their faith and trust in him, every time we see them, we will hear, "I love you this much, this much." He left the scars to say, "Believe, believe, and blessed are you who believe even though you do not see."